what's so interesting to me about all of this is the paradigm shift in college football, and the fact that I don't know if the NCAA and all of these schools can put the genie back in the bottle. Like, there's an interesting opinion piece in USA Today this morning that I totally agree with, where they're talking about, I mean, the Brian Kelly thing to me, and I apologize to anybody that disagrees with this, but to me, I think the Brian Kelly story is such a bigger story than the Lincoln Riley story, because he's not only leaving what is considered or has historically been considered one of the best jobs in college football, he's doing it in the middle of a time when they still could be playing for a national championship. If he'd waited another week, it might be more defensible. But for him to leave yesterday to take that job in the midst of this, after he recruited these players and committed to these players, is just shocking to me. And the fact that college football can allow that to go on is not good for the sport. It's not good for the organization. It's not really good for anybody except the individual coaches that can walk out on these contracts. I mean, I'm making a pittance compared to what those guys are making, and I feel like my contract is way more strict than theirs are. And I think that college football's got to do something about that, or it's really going to create a problem. And now you add into this, this is the angle that yesterday before the Brian Kelly story I found so interesting, is you add in the element of the transfer portal and the ability, and I'm all for players being able to control their own destiny. However, you create a situation where, hey, the coach is gone, maybe I want to go somewhere else. We don't know how what the long-term impact or the near-term impact of that could be on a program like Oklahoma or Notre Dame.
And I just want to say real quick, I'm in for Dr. Tim Love today, and we'll tell you more about them, too, in a few minutes. But Brad, no, you're exactly right. You add in the transfer portal, and then you add in now the early signing date, the December signing date versus February or whatever like it used to be. So now there's much more of an urgency to get the new coach in place and have them recruiting here in the first couple of weeks of December, right? So,
well, yeah, and it's not like this is a new issue. So, you know, you've had coaches leaving. Now, it's been a little more structured than this, but that's not going to change. We're going to continue to see these things. Now, maybe not on the level that we've seen with Oklahoma and Notre Dame both losing their coach, but I think that that's why some of these teams, USC specifically, made the move at the time that they did. It's funny to look back. I said yesterday it's like watching Fight Club or Shutter Island. Like, you look back at it after you know what the twist is, and you go, oh, yeah, how could I not have seen that? But it was like a magic trick. We were all watching LSU and focused on the LSU story. And meanwhile, USC was over here laughing and going, nobody's even thinking about us, and we've got all our ducks in a row and ready to do this. I think what people really are offended by more than anything with the Lincoln Riley thing, aside from just the hurt of being rejected, is – the idea that he wants us and thinks that we will believe that this all came together in a couple of hours after the Bedlam game. I mean, that's just ludicrous and unbelievable.
That's the darndest thing, Brad. Darndest thing. I mean, Lincoln Riley got home Saturday night, and there's a message that USC might be interested. And then USC, I mean, they get on the phone early Sunday morning and, you know, get on a Zoom call, and heck, within a couple hours, I mean, they had it all done and wrapped up. And
yeah, they found reportedly $100 million all of a sudden to throw at a guy and get him to come in. I mean, that's just ridiculous to think. But I do think that they made the move that they made as early as they did because of what you just said, which is they know that they've got to be on top of it and ready to pull the trigger as soon as they can. And once Oklahoma was out of the Big 12 championship game, it was time to move, and Lincoln Riley was their guy, and they did it, and they got it. And maybe he wasn't as involved in it, but I find it hard to believe and imagine that he didn't have an inkling of an idea until after that game be some interest from USC.
Like Brandon Sosna, is that how you say his name, the chief of staff at USC? He was talking about Saturday night, and he's in a suite at the USC BYU game, and the OU OSU game is on one of the screens, and they are very worried as it's going down the wire, because they knew it could swing Riley's decision, or at least at the very least delay his decision. But he said, I mean, this involved months of work, multiple consultants, roughly 400 pages of data, 50 slide presentation, and so forth that they showed, you know, to as part of their search process and so forth. And according to Lincoln Riley, just on some whim, he just USC calls early Sunday morning, and he says, you know what, that's a heck of a deal, and all of a sudden has all of his assistants on board and his agent and so forth, and within, you know, that they're on the plane the next morning. I mean, that's – no one believes that.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Just with a little bit of perspective, I don't begrudge Lincoln Riley making the move that he did. You and I were talking before we went on the air about I didn't watch all of the press conference yesterday. I saw a good bit of it, but I didn't see the part where Joe C was saying that Lincoln was plugged in on the SEC move discussion. But just on the merit, Lincoln Riley took a job for more money in arguably a more desirable place to live with a lot more upside. It's hard to begrudge him that, and it's going to be easier for him to win national championships there than it will be in Oklahoma going forward after the move into the SEC. So with a little perspective, I don't begrudge him that. I begrudge him thinking I'm stupid enough to think that he did all of that in 2 hours on Saturday night, Sunday morning.
I'm with you. I think he made a good move. I mean, for his career, I do think it's going to be easier to dominate the Pac-12 than it is the SEC, obviously. And so he's got a better path to the playoff, to me, in my opinion, at USC than he had at OU in the SEC. I don't blame him. I just don't like the way that he went about it, and
sure.
And he's playing us all as fools with what he's telling us, you know, and how it all came together at USC on Sunday morning and all of that.
Just
but I want to get back to what.
This is what I thought was the right move, and this was best for my family and for my future, and so I decided to do it. Just own it, and don't expect us to be stupid enough to do it. Now, real quick before we do go to what you're wanting to talk about, the opposite of what I said USC did, I think LSU tried to do by saying Coach O's not coming back and getting out in front of being one of the early front runners for an opening that people could look to and go, I'd take that job, except it didn't play out for them the way that it played out for USC.
And it gets back to what Lincoln Riley was talking about earlier in the season, is because of everything that we've talked about and early signing date and all that, that's why teams are making the move to fire coaches more in the middle of the season and get their ducks in a row for this time of year, for right
now. That goes back to what I was talking about. That's not good for the sport. That's
not
good for the culture of college football.
And Lincoln Riley, you know, he came out and spoke against it at that time. But I want to get to the – after Riley made the move, everyone said the first, you know, storyline was, well, he's afraid to go coach in the SEC and so forth. Or that maybe, number one, that OU left him out of the loop, which they did not leave him out of the loop on the SEC. Or maybe that he, you know, that OU, he was in the loop, but he wasn't on board with it. And according to Joe C. at the press conference yesterday, Joe C. said that when Riley was told about the SEC move, he didn't share any reservations about it. Josie's quote was, he was engaged in our thoughts about it. He was definitely on board with it. And in many conversations since that announcement was made, he continued to be very much on board with it, Josie added. And he added that he and Harris had been discussing, an enhanced contract for Riley for some time. But he said there wasn't any mention of unrest. You know, the stories that Riley is unhappy about this, that, and so forth. There wasn't any mention of unrest regarding the SEC.
I want to ask you about something that Mark had some perspective on yesterday, which is the idea that Lincoln had gone to the administration at OU and wanted some improvements going into the SEC to put it more on level ground, and that the university basically said, we're not going to do that for a while because we're not going to have the money to do that. What's your thoughts on that? Is Oklahoma at a disadvantage in terms of facilities, et cetera, going into the SEC versus an Alabama, a Georgia, a Florida, some of those teams? And do you put any merit in that being one of the issues that sort of put a wedge between he and the university?
No, I think that Mark might be right there. I think that could be an issue. I think, and Joe C's not going to sit there and say that, you know, talk about the demands that Lincoln was making and say that they were turning those down. But on the other hand, I don't want to act like OU is, you know, sisters of the poor or whatever. I mean, OU has money to spend. Maybe, you know, with all that happened with the pandemic and so forth, you know what I'm saying? Maybe they're not quite as flush right now as they would be in normal times. But, yeah, I think that, you know, that could have been. I can see Lincoln going and saying, hey, if you guys want to compete with the big boys, I need this and I need that and I need, you know, more money for my staff or support staff and all that. Those conversations probably did take place.
Yeah, I mean, we can wonder all day long, and I don't know if we'll ever fully know the answer to it. All I do know is that it ain't going back. You're not going back and changing the decision now. And so you got to move forward. You got to consider who's it going to be, what's it going to be, what's the context. I do worry about the transfer portal. We saw Hazelwood. I assume that's a legitimate tweet that I saw yesterday that Hazelwood announced he's going to go into the portal. I think the decommits are to be expected. I mean, there's no reason for a high school kid that committed to go play for a coach. Now, it does kind of burn you a little bit when you see photos of him with the players he had committed to OU standing there with a USC T-shirt on already. But the idea that these high school kids are going to decommit from Oklahoma, I'm not that surprised by that. I do worry about that transfer portal angle and what that's going to mean in terms of the build of the team already. And what kind of an eight ball that's going to put the new coach behind if all of a sudden they come in and they've lost a bunch of players that already were a part of this team. That's going to make the rebuild that much more difficult.
And that's why Bob Stoops really is a key. And I thought he was tremendous in that
press
conference.
He was very good.
Brad.
Yeah, Mark had an interesting perspective on that, too. And I hadn't really thought about it, but it makes a lot of sense that I'm sure Bob feels a sense of responsibility. I'll put it this way. I've had people come to me before and say, hey, my kid is looking for a job. Do you know anybody that might hire them? They'd love to work at the radio station. Could you get them a job at the radio station? And oftentimes I'm hesitant to do it because if I don't know the kid that well, I don't want them attached to me, right? I don't want them to be part of my legacy. And I think that that's sort of how Bob feels about Lincoln Riley is he's the guy that brought him in. He's the guy that promoted him to be the guy that can take over and transition smoothly, keep the car in the middle of the road, and maybe even make it go a little bit faster. And so when this blew up the way that it did, I do think that Bob, I don't know how upset he was about it, but I do think that Bob felt a responsibility to the program that, hey, this was the guy that I promoted, so I feel like I need to go in and step in and try and clean up as much of the mess as I can.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.